This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 23rd of September, 2021, day after the FOMC, which was kind of an interesting 1-2 punch, lack of a punch on the one, as the FOMC statement only included very small changes, and one of those being the hint at the coming taper. And then in the accompanying materials, I think the market concentrating on the fact that the unemployment rate forecasts were not adjusted at all out the curve. And despite the dot plot bringing forward a little bit the anticipated time frame, sort of the median sort of time for the rate hike liftoff being right at that dividing line between 2022 and 2023, was underwhelmed as well. So we saw the dollar actually selling off. There was no reaction in rate markets. But then in the press conference, Fed Chair Powell coming out quite strong on the tapering message in terms of both timing, that they're really ready to trigger this very likely in November, as long as we get a decent September jobs report. And if we look out the curve, it sounds like they're fairly flexible on the pace, and that pace could be accelerated depending on how the economy shapes up. So that message did see a decent adjustment higher in rate expectations, a pretty modest adjustment in the dollar that is somewhat unwound. We'll get to that in a moment. Peter, I guess the key for equity markets was, or not the key, but this was pretty much a non-event. You sort of had a bounce back in risk appetite ahead of this meeting, and you know there wasn't much impact on the market, even as the market was a bit surprised by the Powell comments during the press conference.
Yeah, how can we put it? I mean, I think the market had over the past 2 or 3 months with the U.S. 10-year yield just compressing to a very narrow trading range. It almost felt like the Fed has been diluted to and nothing really of importance, right? I mean, there are two themes in the market we're talking about, at least in the land of equities. It's the inflation and to what extent it can pressure margins. I have a little bit on that later in the podcast. And then there was this Evergrande, the Chinese housing market, that became sort of the excuse for now to sell off, and now we are bouncing back. And yeah, that's the key story. I mean, we have it on slide 3. So we talked about it yesterday. Evergrande had negotiated this bond payment. There are two payments due today. There's nothing really official out yet from Evergrande on whether they paid or not, but there are news out that one of its major shareholders is actually considering selling its shares, even though it will be with a loss. And on slide 3, I've put in the Hang Seng. I've put in, this is on purpose, both because it's for regulatory purposes, we need to show a 5-year chart. But I think the weekly is interesting because the intraday move, we're up 0.9% in the Hang Seng, but we were up 2.6% at the highs for the session today. Same story with Evergrande. I think we are up 11%, 12%, 13%, and we were as high as 32. So it almost like feel like it's fizzling out already. And my takeaway is the same as I said yesterday. I think the Chinese housing market will stay with us for quite some time. It's like in the US, the housing crisis there, it started showing cracks 2 years before Lehman Brothers. This is not the Lehman Brothers event, Evergrande, I don't think so, but it's the early cracks, and it will be a slow motion train wreck from now on. I just want to add before we jump on, John, on slide 2, I've put in the team basket overview. It's just there's very little signal. It has been a terrible month for growth baskets, but logistics and semiconductors, which is sitting in the supply side crunch, is doing pretty well.
Yeah, it's also a bit tiresome to get the sense that people have become Chinese property market experts. I hope we haven't tried to give that impression. We just sort of have highlighted the importance of this issue, especially for the longer term. But it feels like there's very much a buy the dip mentality, that this is something that, we get the key headline or two, bailout, no bailout, and we move on. I think as you point out, the longer term situation is what's really key there. And actually, I think to a degree, as you highlight, the FOMC is not so important this time around. It's more about some forward issues that I think could get the market into trouble, those being the debt ceiling, the fiscal cliff coming up next year, the sense of dysfunction in Congress, of course, blocking the path to new fiscal, et cetera. And then all the uncertainty around inflation and crimping of profit margins. So these are issues that we need to talk about more than buying the dip, just as a reflexive thing. And and whether the FOMC is going to lift off in 2023 or sometime late next year. Just rounding out this FOMC reaction, just want to put up a couple of things for perspective. So on slide four, circling those dots for the 2022 on the Fed dot plot, two more added to those believing that rate liftoff will happen in late 2022. That puts, again, the median sort of right on the dividing line between that year and the next. And then you see that on the left, this is the December 2022 Eurodollar contract. So sort of where the Fed is, or where the market is pricing the Fed for liftoff, which is currently around for basically the December meeting next year. And, you know, a fairly chunky reaction. All that happened, by the way, during the Powell press conference. And just for size, you can compare that to the mid-June move there, which was quite significant off the June FOMC meeting. If we recall, that was the meeting where the market got the sense, okay, the Fed is changing direction here. And then all of that was backtracked in July and into early August on the Delta variant outbreak. So we're sort of busy semi-unwinding that again. But you can see that we really haven't changed here since April of this year. So it's really modest stuff all in all. But I guess over in your space, Ola, we've seen a little bit of reaction in gold markets. That's, I guess, the sort of chief market that reacted to the FOMC. But otherwise, it's not really a lot in play in the commodity space over this meeting.
It didn't have much of an impact, John, because first the dollar, which initially then strengthened after the during the press conference, was offset by the bond market, where we really didn't see any reaction at all. If anything, just a small reduction in break-even yields. So forward inflation expectations came down a couple of ticks, basis points. So yields are very well behaved, but it wasn't enough to support gold, which took a $25 tumble. Early in the day, tried to make it back above 1780, failed, and now we're back in the 60s with support down around that 1740, basically just trading sideways for now. But a metal in that semi-precious space, which has had a very volatile week and a very strong recovery right now, is platinum. You can see them here on slide eight. We dropped quite substantially last week in response to a collapse in palladium. The whole semiconductor tightness or shortage, which is hurting the automobile industry, helps send these prices down. But you can see the platinum is a bit of a recovery, a strong recovery unfolding there, up nearly $100 since the low on Monday. And as per the charts, $1,010 level now is, which we are only just a few dollars away from, is a key level in terms of potential further upside. So that's probably one I'll be watching today. And if we should round out the commodity space, the other market, which is or the sector which continued to attract most of the attention, remains the energy sector. We had another big draw in U.S. inventories yesterday, and this did help support the price. You can see them here on slide seven. Excuse me. We're above that 76.37 level, or actually just right on that level right now, which is the recent highs, and you can see the next levels of resistance on the upside. But the market is tightening. We can see that on the time spreads in the top right-hand corner. The December spread between December and June, so the six-month spread in Brent crude is above $4. So really an indication the market is tightening. And it is not only the U.S., where we also got the production reductions from the Gulf of Mexico, which is going to last a bit longer than expected, but also, excuse me, also the whole surge in natural gas, which is going to be adding an impact, additional demand for fuel products this winter if these high levels are maintained. And for now, it looks like they are. It's going to be very windy in Europe this week, so that obviously will help power generation, but prices are still not far from the record peaks we saw last week.
Okay, now let's switch gears a little bit. We have other central bank meetings certainly on the agenda for also for today after the Fed last night. And we have the Norwegian Central Bank up where we're looking for a rate hike. And it's all about the guidance because the market is quite aggressively priced in further rate normalization. And that crude oil rally, of course, is a key component of recent Norwegian krona strength. If we continue to see risk on, certainly eyeing the huge 10 level in Euronoki. Just look at a chart there, really massive level. But one of the more interesting ones as well is the Bank of England today, where, again, the market is pricing in rather quickly. If you look at slide five, you can see the 2-year EU to UK yield spread. You can see how much that normalization, basically the EU has been stuck in neutral for forever in terms of the 2-year rates. UK has been repriced away from ever going into negative and now being priced for rate hikes starting as early as Q2 of next year. And we're basically at the high of the cycle. So the spread is at the low at minus 100 basis points. In the past, this has correlated quite well with euro sterling, but you can see there's a total lack of correlation there, except a very small directional sympathy with that recently. So even if the Bank of England is sort of fulfilling these hawkish expectations, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to give sterling any support. And then the key question is, well, why is that? And I think it's about the constraints we're seeing in the UK economy in terms of capacity. You can't get products to market. There's not enough trucking capacity. There are vegetables rotting in fields in Scotland because they can't get them to market. Seasonal labor doesn't want to come for the harvest. And then the UK is sitting in the worst spot in terms of the natural gas debacle. So those considering production would obviously steer clear of the UK until the energy situation clears up, et cetera. Ongoing in the background, of course, big external deficits. So curious to see, we're at trigger levels really in euro sterling there around the 86 level. There's a little bit of a range resistance above that. You can see on the blue candlestick there above 86. And in cable, so sterling versus the dollar, around 136 and the nominal lows just below that, whether we get, with or without the Bank of England fulfilling those expectations, and certainly if they fail to do so, whether we get an extension of the sterling sell-off here. So that's my key interest in FX today, besides the Norwegian Central Bank. And then whether the dollar, as you can see on slide six, we saw that dollar reaction moving in sympathy with Fed rate hike expectations moving higher. Saw Eurodollar dipping below 117, but without really follow-on activity and with very positive sentiment in the background at the moment, you really have a hard time, you know, maintaining ahead of steam for the dollar. I think that would require, you know, punching below the range lows would either require some more risk off and or U.S. longer treasury yields. So the 10-year benchmark that Ola mentioned, the longer yields bursting higher. And those have just been completely dead in the water there. So we'll hopefully have Althea to talk about longer yields on the podcast tomorrow. Let's get back to equities. Peter, we have a focus here on, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I don't know if that's where you want to dive back in. But this whole sense, and you know, talked about the UK and some of the capacity constraints, all this supply chain problems everywhere with the physical economy. And we talked a little bit about it yesterday, the contrast between these limitations that companies are seeing that are heavily, you know, reliant on physical movement of stuff versus those that are, you know, in bits and bytes out in the virtual space who aren't limited by these constraints. So what's your focus on that front?
Yeah, it's our chief economist, our chief investment officer, Steen Jacobsen, also wrote it in our upcoming quarterly outlook. I mean, it very much feels like the physical world is just too small, basically, to support both our ambitions in green transformation, but also it's too fragile to deal with a big shock like the pandemic. That's what we're seeing right now. And I've put out these charts before in our podcast. You know, if you look at the capital expenditures levels in the metals and materials sector, it's inflation adjusted. It's the lowest it has been in 30 years, probably more, because I don't have data going back even further. So we're investing so little in our physical world, and we need the physical world more than ever. And I've tried on slide 9 as well to show the difference. And here you have the S&P 500 versus NASDAQ 100, their 12-month trailing net profit margin. You just see the difference. So the period before the financial crisis, it was not like NASDAQ and technology companies were that much better than you know, the ordinary companies in the, I call them ordinaries, but they are superior in a global sense. But the more typical S&P 500 company, and look at post the financial crisis, we are in a unique environment. And I think this very much speaks into the political ambitions of trying to tax digital companies with a separate tax scheme. So you have a global tax rate on corporates. We'll know more next month when the OECD is finalizing their tax discussions. But then you have a surcharge for digital companies because they just operate under different parameters than a physical company. But that's a longer story. I will write more about it. And then we have this headline today coming in, John, with the chip shortage, the semiconductor shortages. It's just impacting these global automakers, and now the estimate is that it will cost the industry $210 billion in sales. And meanwhile, I have put in a small chart as well there, where you can see the global car industry. This is an ETF that is tracking it. It's barely down from the highs. So you have a massive situation in the car industry. You have a shift towards EV, which in the short term will compress profit margins, and you have a market like, yeah, you know what, we've never liked car any more than now. And you have a car automaker from France called Faurecia, which is one of the big ones. They've just lowered their operating margin guidance this morning and their cash flow generation because of rising input costs. So there are a lot of issues with this.
Yeah, one company not having issues, and it's one of these crazy things we've seen since the pandemic. You know, if you told us before the pandemic outbreak, we're going to have this horrible situation, the whole world's going to shut down. What should you do? Well, you should buy a Nike. You know, the whole phenomenon of, I guess, you know, it's a part and parcel of, there was a lot of stimulus to replace demand, and then folks sitting at home, they want to buy goods for getting out of the house and I guess running around the neighborhood in their fancy new tracksuits, whatever. But it's really just really remarkable. I mean, look at the acceleration you've got there on slide 10 in the share price. I guess the big surprise was earlier this year, must have been a key earnings report with that latest spike. But so we've sort of gotten back to that level. What's is this recent decline, relative decline in recent weeks, is that on simple sympathy with the broader sell-off, or is there a desire to sort of sell some of these equities that did so well, perhaps ironically due to the lockdowns?
I think it's a combination of all the things you just mentioned, but I think also that it would be odd if Nike is not impacted by rising input cost and also some logistic nightmare, because a lot of Nike shoes are produced in Asia and then shipped to in consumer markets around the world. So what I'll be watching in this earnings release they report after the market closes, whether to what extent they are beginning to feel an impact on margins, and to what extent they are considering maybe, you know, diversifying their manufacturing footprint. But for the quarter that ended in August, you know, the market is expecting 18% revenue growth and 17% earnings per share growth, and probably a record for a single quarter for Nike in terms of operating margins, expected to be 19%. So let's see. But it is, for now, Nike is clearly the winner coming out of the pandemic within the sports retailing or sports fashion business, if you like. Adidas and some of the other brands are trailing the performance of Nike. And then don't forget, we have a COVID wave that is a little bit more severe in the US than we have seen in some of, which is the core market of Nike. So to what extent that have impacted their sales will be interesting to watch.
All right, and also interesting to watch is today's macro calendar, a pretty busy one. We have those flash September PMIs out of Europe this morning. Those are coming out even as we're speaking here on the podcast. Switzerland S&B decision, not expecting anything there. I think Swiss franc will correlate A, with risk sentiment negatively, and B, with longer yields if those pop up. That's our only chance to get the Swiss franc sort of notably lower. Bank of England, we previewed that, as well as the Norwegian Central Bank. South African Central Bank also out, no rate change expected there. They're getting a boost, however, or at least the South African Rand is getting a boost from that big pop in platinum prices. It's a key producer of that metal. Turkish Central Bank, so we've seen a pretty weak Turkish lira of late. There's a lot of energy around that as the inflation situation not yet under control, and you have this overhanging sense that the political leadership in Turkey wants that rate lower, but you still have the difficulty of very high realized inflation and domestic distrust in the currency that sort of aggravates the entire situation. So interesting to see how they navigate that set of circumstances. The latest initial jobless claims, if I recall, last week's was the lowest for the cycle at 322K, and various other bits and pieces you can see there. I think that, of course, the natural gas storage change, quite twitchy numbers there for that particular market, which is taking on a lot of importance. We've seen a decent correction in U.S. natural gas ahead of that release. And then rounding out the week tomorrow, we have the German IFO survey couple of Fed speakers, including Chair Powell himself, although I think we've heard enough from him. And then really, I'm hoping to have Stan Jakobsen on tomorrow. But regardless, we'll have to have a little bit of a chat about the German federal election, which is set for Monday. And we'll be talking about that Monday as well. Really key for the future of how the future of Europe shapes up and Germany's attitude towards the EU. So with that, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.